Nice to have you with us today. Our first matter is Dean versus State, case number 71798. And if you would, for my clerk, state your full name, any party that may be with you. I don't think I see any here, but and then Ms. Watt, would you like some rebuttal time put on the clock? Let us know now. Like, do you want 5 minutes? Perfect. Okay, so whenever you're ready, you can proceed. Sure.
I have to wait for the green light, right? Oh, okay. Your Honor, I'm going to keep this short and sweet because I know that this court is very familiar with the law involved. And I do thank the opportunity given to Mr. Dean for his voice to be heard. Even application of the law from the most powerful to the least powerful, as in Mr. Dean's case, speaks volumes for this court. There are two main reasons why the trial court's ruling granting judgments, summary judgment motion of the respondents should be reversed. The first one is because there is a genuine issue of material facts still remaining. And the second one is because when the trial court assessed, made its assessment as to whether or not summary judgment should be granted in ruling for the respondent, they failed to view the facts in a light most favorable to the non-moving party, which would be the appellant. You know, the law is clearly established that to survive a summary judgment motion, you need to take the facts as presented by the person that's not filing the summary motion judgment. And here, in this case, clearly, my client asserted in his complaint that's made under the penalty of perjury that the warden said no more keyboards. So he said, fine, I'm going to file a grievance. And when he filed a grievance and then filed paperwork to the effect, instead of and getting his grievance denied, and he chose to appeal, he said in his complaint that they lost his DOC 1517 and that they sent the keyboard back, even though clearly on the form itself it said the disputed property will not be sent back until the grievance process is over, which includes the appeal, and that a false report was filed while he was undergoing the appellate process within the prison administrative code, stating that he had settled the case when he didn't, and he was very frustrated by the process. Instead of assessing the facts in light of Mr. Dean's recitation of the facts in his complaint and in all his subsequent filing, instead the trial court applied the facts as alleged by the respondent, which was, oh, he's unhappy, he can't keep his keyboard, we adjudicated it, he should be happy about that. And the trial court took the respondent's word and applied the respondent's facts and ruled upon the respondent's motion and granted it. And so when you apply the correct law and apply the correct standard, clearly there is a genuine issue of material facts. Now, the second reason why the trial court's ruling should be reversed is because my client satisfies all five elements of First Amendment retaliatory case, his violation of First Amendment rights. The first one, the first required element is that prisoner undertook a protected conduct. And according to Angel, the prisoner filed a grievance, which is protected right under the First Amendment. So the first element is satisfied. The second element, which is a state actor, and it has to be a state actor, took retaliatory action. And here, the retaliatory action, as asserted by Mr. Dean, was that he that he was told that his grievance was destroyed, that his keyboard was sent home way before his grievance and appellate claims were adjudicated through the prison administrative process, and that a false report was filed claiming that he had settled his grievance when that simply wasn't true.
How do you compare that particular prong, what you've just said, with Angel? I mean, here you have a memorandum ahead of time that shows that it was going to go, the keyboard was going to go early on from the warden.
Certainly, and that's a great question. The retaliatory conduct isn't what the respondent claims, which is, I didn't get to keep my keyboard. The retaliatory conduct was the destruction of his DOC 1517, a false report filed by Jennifer Nash that Mr. Dean had settled his grievance, that he agreed to have his keyboard sent back to his mother. And the third retaliatory action was, sorry, I just had a blank.
I think I took you off your elements.
You know what it is? I can't look at you. That's why I keep looking at you.
Some things never change.
I know. You're penetrating. It's just unsettling.
First time we've heard that.
Even
now I know why.
Well, we used to go against each other back in the day, so she's still intimidated by those years of torture that I did to her, right?
Okay, imagine as a new PD dealing
with me.
Judge Silver at the DA's
See?
Office.
And it's I'm been years saying, and still frightening.
Yes, very serious. And I'm clearly saying that for sympathy, and it's disgusting, I know, I'm very sorry. Thank you. Anyway, so I hope that answered your question, and I hope you won't be offended if I keep looking at them.
No, that's okay.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so the fourth element is that the retaliatory tactic here was done because of the assertion of protective right. And so here, what happened, Mr. Dean, was the respondents wouldn't have taken those steps and couldn't have without Mr. Dean instituting his grievance and his subsequent appellate processes.
Well, I mean, while you're on that prong, you know, chilling effect is usually you file a complaint and they throw you in solitary for a month. I mean, you know, everybody sees that. No one's ever going to file a complaint again. But this one, what you're alleging happened here was the state destroyed a piece of paper. How is that? First of all, how do other inmates even know that happened? And even if they knew that happened, how does that necessarily chill them against filing similar grievances in the future?
And again, it's completely understandable that you ask that. Thankfully, from my side, the retaliatory act, the chilling effect is according to an objective standard, not a subjective. So that I understand that administrative segregation is much more severe than destruction of legal document within the environment of a prison administrative proceeding. But I think... But the standard is subjective, which is, would a person of ordinary firmness be discouraged from conducting further future First Amendment activities? And it's discouraging when you are in a prison cell all day and you try to get help and you try to attain the justice you believe you deserve, to have the evidence destroyed and be told all we can do is just lie about it and your case is done, that would chill a person of ordinary firmness. And I would assert to your honors that a person of ordinary firmness is pretty paunchy. So I believe that is a legitimate chilling effect. But the standard that we're looking at right here, obviously he has to prove at trial, you know, under the civil standard, that by preponderance of evidence that is a chilling effect and it's a jury finding. But here, we're just talking about summary judgment where there has to be a genuine issue of material fact. And in light of what happened to Mr. Dean, which is they destroyed, you know, key documents within his grievance and appellate process, there is no legitimate penal interest, that it is a chilling effect under the ordinary firm person of firmness, ordinary firmness of an ordinary person. So, thank you.
Well, you're right at 5 minutes anyway, so that's good timing. We'll hear from respondents. I am. Congratulations.
Good morning, Chief Justice Silver. May it please the court. I'm Randall Gilmer. I'm here on behalf of the defendants, Department of Corrections, and various either current or former employees of the Department of Corrections. And we're here today, as the court is aware, for a retaliation claim alleged by Mr. Dean. And I'd like to just focus first off on the five elements of the retaliation claim, as learned counsel on the other side focused their argument on that as well. I have the elements in a different order, but I think they're all still the same. And I'd like to focus first on the adverse effects here. And I know Learned Counsel spent a lot of time talking about the destruction of documents. However, below in the motions and the arguments and even in the briefing, it focused mostly, if not exclusively, on the keyboard and the keyboard being sent out. With regard to the documents, I don't think there's any debate here that the grievance procedure went through completion, and it was denied. So I don't think that the document element there has much of an issue. I'd like to focus on, unless the court has questions regarding the documents, I'd like to focus on the keyboard and the fact that it was sent out to his mother prior to the completion of the grievance procedure.
Well, let me just ask you that. I mean, in this case, it's sent out to his mother, so realistically, there's probably a good chance that she's saving is going to get it back. But in other situations, because we've had other cases, as you know, in which similar things have been at least alleged. I don't know if they happened, but they've been alleged. So in another case, let's imagine that the guards take something from an inmate, inmate files a grievance, the inmates then send it to somebody who then either loses it, disposes of it. Then here's the problem. Then the inmate wins. Now this property is unrecoverable. Aren't you opening yourself up to a civil rights lawsuit now with actual money damages because you did something which may even be against policy and whatever that item was is unrecoverable now?
Yes, Judge Howe, I think that is a very, very strong hypothetical. And I think in that circumstance, I would feel very less comfortable standing before you.
I thought I read in his, and you know, I could be wrong, at one point when I was reading his writings, grievances, he said that it was lost and he wanted a 15 or 20 inch TV set. He'd take the flat screen or a boombox. Did they lose it?
Well, we did not lose it. In the grievances, he indicates that it was somehow lost after transport. We mailed it to the address where he told us to mail it to in the unauthorized property form with the brass slip that he sent. His inmate account was credited for, I think it was $19 and some odd.
Oh, you credited his postage?
For the purchase of the postage because he had completed the brass slip. So that is evidence of the fact that we did mail it to his mother as he asked us to. And I think that's where Judge Howe's hypothetical comes very closely here. This isn't that case, and I would submit, as I said, I would feel less comfortable as to what would occur if that situation occurred, if we had mailed it to a third party or disposed of it or gotten rid of it, and then the inmate ended up winning the appeal. I think that would be a much stronger case for the inmate. But here we have a situation where he filled out the authorization, the unauthorized property form, provided us the address to his mother, also did the other affirmative step of filling out the brass slip so that we could credit for the postage to mail it to his mother. And I would submit, as I believe it was Judge Powell that said, generally when you think of a chilling effect situation, you think of being put in, you know, in administrative segregation or disciplinary segregation for 30 days or some other type of negative consequence to you. I would submit that sending personal property to your mother, I use the analogy of if you lose track of a high school classmate and you had property of theirs from high school and you have no idea where they were, but you still live in the house where their mother is, you're going to return that property to their mother, because who else is going to make sure that the person gets the property than their mother? If you can't trust somebody's mother to get to keep their property in safekeeping, who can you trust? So I think it's very difficult to say that the determination or the mistake, whatever it was, to mail the keyboard to Mr. Dean's mother was done for some sort of nefarious or adverse situation. So
well, if we look in the light most favorable, though, to the non-moving party, which would be this inmate, you're asserting that it wasn't in retaliation, it was because of the memo. He's asserting it's retaliation. Does that not create a genuine issue, a material fact, for which some precludes summary judgment?
Well, again, I think it doesn't for a couple reasons, Your Honor. First off, it has to be the adverse effect. So even if we say there's a fact issue and we mailed it out in his mind to be retaliatory, how is that an adverse effect for us to mail it to his mother? Because if he had one, which he didn't do here, let's remember that at the end of the day, the grievances were denied and all the keywords were gone. He was not permitted to have it grandfathered in. So it wasn't a situation where we took the keyboard from his cell where he was using it pending the outcome of the appeal. The keyboard was in the property room pending the outcome of the appeal. So he was already, to the extent you want to use the word, deprived of his property, although, you know, to use that terminology, that occurred when the memo came out and it was put in the property room. At that point in time, he wasn't going to ever be able to use the keyboard again while he was institutionalized at High Desert. So whether or not the keyboard is sitting in the living room at his mother's house or the property room, that doesn't change the underlying fact that he
Where was that in the record, that it's sitting in the, that it was immediately taken sitting in the property room, as opposed to he filed the grievance and then it was taken?
The memo said that they had to be sent out within 30 days. And the unauthorized property form that was filled out, that is done when property is seized from an individual.
And when was that?
That form was in April 17th, I believe. It was April. It was done roughly 30 days after the memo came out, and after he filed his grievance on March 31st, and then he filled out the property form, or the unauthorized property form, was in mid-April, which coincides with the time frame of the memo that says you have 30 days to tell us what you want to do with the property. So at that point in time, in April, the keyboard was no longer in his possession. That's why the unauthorized property form was completed, and at that point in time, he gave us the address to send it to, as well as the brass slip. Yes, the grievance was still pending at that time in a different realm, because there's no indication anywhere in the record that Lieutenant Day, which is also referred to as Sergeant Day from time to time, he had a promotion during the interim, that Lieutenant Day, who oversaw the property room, had any knowledge that the grievance process was continuing, which also goes into some of the ambiguity here, because he began the grievance process, but then after the grievance process started, he filled out the form and gave us the address where to send it to, and filled out the brass slip as well. So back to the point, he didn't have the keyboard. So whether or not, as of mid-April, we know that the keyboard was in the property room, and then it was mailed out to his mother on July 2nd. So the only thing that
there wasn't an affidavit, though, from Lieutenant Day saying that I didn't even know that he had filed a grievance when I took his property.
There is not an affidavit from Lieutenant Day that says that. However, there's also no indication in the record that he was aware of it. So I don't think that fact is neutral towards both.
Well, but in his, I mean, isn't the on summary judgment, the whole purpose of alleging that this is retaliation is impliedly the prison collectively, we don't have any depositions, we don't know what the evidence is, but isn't it an implied contention that somebody there knew about it? That's the whole essence of the retaliation claim.
And then you're moving for summary judgment. It's your burden. Generally, the other side would file an opposition, and the case law is you better have an affidavit or some evidence.
Sure. Well, it's
why didn't you put an affidavit?
Certainly. Well, it was our burden to prove that there was no genuine issue of material fact with regard to the elements of the claim. And that's where I would argue that I'll concede for purposes of this argument, even though there's nothing in the record, let's assume Lieutenant Day did know that the grievance process had begun at this or knew about the grievance procedure. Let's assume that.
Okay.
I still don't think that you can reach the elements of the retaliation claim because of the very premise I was indicating. If we wanted to retaliate against him for his keyboard, we would have destroyed the keyboard. We would have we would have given it to a third party, a charity.
So you're saying the act of mailing it to the mother
in and of itself,
is not retaliatory.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Right. Because and that advanced a legitimate correctional goal by getting it out of the prison.
Yes, Your Honor. I would think you just give it. I would say that it does for two reasons. First off, I don't think that's the adverse effect when you send something to your mother. I think we can all understand.
Right. I'm saying it wasn't adverse because of the very nature. You're doing it for a reason. That's for a prison goal, and you're not destroying it. But did this case remind you of another recent case we had where the property was destroyed?
I'm not familiar which case you're referring to.
Okay. Maybe you didn't handle that one with the CDs.
Yeah, I don't remember that case. I'm sorry.
Well, at any rate, the property was destroyed during the process.
And as I conceded to Judge Tao at the beginning, I would admit to you that if I was standing here before you and that had happened, that we would have a different case here. Yeah. But we didn't destroy it. We sent it to the address, in fact, that he wanted us to send it to. The concern is he wanted us to wait until the second grievance was done as opposed to after the appeal was done.
Right.
So the argument is we mailed it too early.
He had his first grievance, so I'm not sure where the chilling effect was. He got his hearing.
Exactly.
And the process proceeded.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. Went through the complete process. We mailed it to his mother early. So, worst case scenario.
Why is the prison, the Department of Corrections doing this? Isn't there a procedure so when there's a grievance, everything's put on hold?
Well, that is certainly true, Your Honor. And I'm not going to sit here and say that the Department of Corrections did everything perfect here, and that they should not have made sure that it didn't get sent out. I do think this is a unique circumstance in that the fact that we're not in a situation where it was being destroyed or sent out to a charity. It was going to the mother. I don't know how exactly that happened. It happened on July 2nd, but I think that let's move forward back to Judge Tao's hypothetical. Here, had he gone through the grievance procedure and completed it to finish and won at the grievance procedure, at that point in time, it's with his mother. His mother can send it back. It wouldn't have been a situation where we had the CDs that were destroyed. And yes, that is an issue that we definitely need to ensure so we're not before you here in a different case, but I would submit that thankfully that's not the case before the court today. And I still think that it's difficult to show an adverse impact when we sent it to the address he wanted us to send it to, and he completed the postage for it. If I can just move briefly, I see we're running time, and hopefully I've answered all of your questions. Mm-hmm. I would also like to talk about qualified immunity, which I think is very clear in this case. It was addressed below in the motion pleadings. It was also referenced at oral argument. The district court judge did not make a specific finding with regard to qualified immunity. However, the findings of fact and conclusions of law indicated that none of the five elements, or that plaintiff had not established the five elements of retaliation. And so I would submit that was at least an implicit holding that qualified immunity would apply here because to survive qualified immunity, the inmate has to show that there was a constitutional violation and that the individuals who violated the Constitution were on clear notice that there was a constitutional violation. So the fact that the district court here said that the elements of retaliation had not been met means that there was no constitutional violation. So the first prong of qualified immunity was implicitly determined by the district court in the order itself. Didn't reach the second holding, because if there's no constitutional violation, you don't reach the second prong. But let's assume that the court disagrees and thinks that there could be a constitutional violation by the act of sending the keyboard to the mother a month earlier than it should have, that could create a fact issue with regard to retaliation, that's sufficient adverse and chilling effect. Then I would argue and submit that there's no case law that would put our individual officers here on notice that action of looking at the form, following the warden's orders in the memo, that these need to be out because of legitimate correctional goals, which were, you submitted earlier, the correctional goal to get out here, and I don't think Mr. Deans even alleged that, was that there was concerns that they were using keyboards to hide contraband inside the hollow portions of the keyboard, which was why they wanted to get them out of the prison. So we don't have those elements. We don't have any case law that I would argue that is anything close to what the situation we have here, where we sent the keyboard to the mother of the inmate at the address he gave us to based on a form that he filled out and also completed the postage for it. So I would say that this case squarely falls within qualified immunity, even if there could possibly be an issue of fact with regard to one of the five elements on retaliation. I see that my time is quickly ending. Unless the court has any other questions, I will.
Isn't the burden on the other side to prove all the five factors, as opposed to you're just trying to show there isn't one of them?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. We just have to show that there isn't one of them, and I would submit, as I talked about with the adverse effect, that sending it to the address of his mother after the... May I complete my answer? That element's not met, the legitimate goal, and that there was no chilling effect here because he was able to complete the process. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'm really glad that Respondent pointed out that about the issue of qualified immunity, because qualified immunity doesn't apply in this case when there's a violation of clearly established law. A violation of clearly established law on the form where he is appealing the grievance process, where it has to do with disposing of unauthorized and excessive property. On the form, it says that the disputed property will not be disposed of until the final appellate decision. So on the form. So that puts not just the inmates on notice, that puts all the correctional officers on notice. Every one of them that has the inmates, fill it out. It's clearly spelled on that DOC 1517 form. Your property will not be disposed of until the end of the administrative process. And in Administrative Rule 17.1 subsection 4C, it says for an inmate to proceed in the process of the grievance and of the appellate process, you have to fill out an address of where to send your property. So it's frustrating for my client. Here he is, he wants to file a grievance, proceed with the appellate process, do whatever he has to do as to the keyboard. He is reassured that the property is safe within the jurisdiction of the DOC until the completion of the appellate process. And if he wants to continue with the administrative process, which he has a right to, he has to fill out the address and not to be construed by the respondent as some kind of assent or settlement. So this is what is frustrating for inmates at that institution, which is for them to get what they hope they can want, they almost have traps laid for them. I know that sounds a little dramatic, I can't help it. But it's if you want to assert your protected right, you have to give the address. And then now we're at this stage, and it's construed, oh, you settled it. Why would you have filled out the address unless you wanted it to be sent somewhere? That's kind of a catch-22 for inmates. And I know we're just talking about a keyboard here, but everything, including cup of noodle, is pretty precious in prison and also in my household. But you get, I'm so grateful that your honors are listening to this with great attention, because these are very, very important matters, maybe not to, a person of ordinary firmness, but it's very important to the inmates. Now, so I'm glad that the respondent brought up the issue of qualifying immunity, because it doesn't apply here. It is written on their own forms that they can't do this, that they can't mail it out. Those correctional officers are busy enough watching the inmates, making sure nobody kills each other, you know, I mean, and they go out of their way to mail a keyboard to his mother. And by the way, I think it's so sweet that mothers are characterized so lovingly. But if all mothers were as trustworthy, then I would have never had a career as a criminal defense attorney, because not all mothers are trustworthy. And plus, my client doesn't have his keyboard. Okay.
Did she not get the keyboard, or she claims not to have gotten the keyboard? Because why did I read all over he... I thought I read, maybe I read it wrong, that's what my question was to him, was it looked like she never got the keyboard, like it was lost in transit, or did he not get it? Or he did get the keyboard, or the mom got the keyboard?
She didn't get it, but I don't believe that's something that's on record.
Uh-huh.
Which brings me back to another point, which is the respondent keeps saying it's not on record as to my client's recitation of the facts. But the fact is, he has stated on the record, under the penalty of perjury, what had happened to him, that he had his 1517 destroyed, that there was a false report filed as to his quote-unquote settlement, that the keyboard was sent out and they don't have it anymore. I don't even know if the fact that the keyboard was sent out is on record. And if it is, I stand corrected. I apologize. But, I mean, so it is on record. It is evidence. We are here for summary judgment, so my client isn't required until at trial to worry about the five elements as to the preponderance of proof. He just has to show a material issue of genuine facts, which he has satisfied from his recitation of the facts. And that is the standard that the court should apply de novo, because don't raise your eyebrows. I saw you raise your eyebrows.
I'm writing down what you said.
I'm sorry. I'm a wife. I didn't mean a nag. I can't help it. I see I have seven seconds left. Okay.
Yeah, that's the best part of this court, is that we are able to say time's up.
I can tell that makes you very happy.
It really does, actually. Thank you so much. This case.